All right, so my name is Christine Johnson. Today I'm going to be sharing how to launch or reboot an ASA local chapter. My presentation today has three parts. First, I will introduce myself. Next, I will explain how to launch or reboot a local chapter. And then finally, I will share experiences from the North Star chapter. So I'm Christine Johnson. I'm the president of the North Star chapter, which is in the Twin Cities area. And I guess we get some people who are in Western Wisconsin too. And I'm an senior advanced systems engineer at Honeywell Aerospace, working on inertial navigation systems and differential GPS-aided approach systems at airports. I lead a hardware team for a GPS-aided high-integrity attitude and heading reference system. And I do the qualification testing, lead the qualification testing team also. And our navigation device is the next generation system that integrates GPS inputs and attitude and heading, produces attitude and heading outputs. And we're going to be putting these on urban air mobility vehicles, which are like air taxis and large drones. They're like about the size of a minivan. And I also lead the hardware team for the inertial measurement unit that goes inside of our navigation system. And I've been in on a number of development and verification teams for navigation systems, inertial navigation systems, primarily on Airbus and Boeing, commuter aircraft like Embraer, business jets like Gulfstream. Almost all commercial aircraft have at least one system on it that I've been part of, except the Airbus A350. No bitterness. Today when I fly home, I'll be on an A321, and I did the air data inertial reference system for that aircraft. I've also worked on the Honeywell Smart Pass system, which is a GPS ground augmentation system that provides differential GPS corrections to incoming aircraft as they land. And these are installed all around the world. The most recent installation is at the San Francisco Airport. And later this year, we're planning to install them at JFK and LaGuardia. And recently, I also helped out on a large satellite program. So mostly I work on commercial products, but every once in a while, I'll get some variety. But I work in corporate America. I work in industry. I'm not in academia. I don't have students. And that sort of affects our leadership and our membership at our local chapter. We have two of our leaders are in industry and two are professors at different Christian universities. So our interests and the way we meet and the way we're affiliated, we're not associated with a specific university. We're just kind of a general geographical area. And we have a lot more, maybe more diverse interests than a local student chapter. So first I introduce myself, and next I will explain key steps to start or reboot a local chapter. The first step is to contact Dana. Okay, now I'm done. Just kidding. So Dana's going to get you all kinds of like resources, and she'll be the one that will help you, know what paperwork to fill out and all that sort of stuff. And if you don't know of other local people in your area who would want to be part of a chapter, Dana can give you a printout or an email with all of the local area ASA members. And you can send out a group email and say, hey, who wants to help and start a local chapter? So you need at least three people to get started, and they have to be members in good standing. I don't know what a member not in good standing would be. Maybe that just
not paid their dues.
Not paid their dues. Okay. And you need a president, a vice president, and a webmaster. A treasurer is recommended, but it's not required. And then when you set up your chapter, you kind of have to think, okay, do you want a student chapter at a university? Or do you want like a more broad than just student, but a general chapter at a university? Or do you want something more geographical that would include both academia and industry participants? And then once you've kind of decided that, you will get this this ASA handbook that you'll have to look through. And Dana will probably just highlight the important parts. And then you will fill out this chapter formation planning worksheet and return that to Dana. And then you will fill out an application, and there's a student application or like a non-regular application, local chapter application, depending on what type of chapter you want to make. And so you'll fill that out and return that to Dana. And then you get money. You get a little budget that you can use for bringing in a speaker or renting a facility or my favorite, snacks. So when we meet, we typically have some amount of little snacks. And I think if you had students, that snacks would probably be really important too. Okay, and so now that you're a chapter, you get to plan your first event or your reboot event, right? So you could do an online event and have a speaker or a panel discussion. Like you could bring in Jennifer Weissman. She could talk about why Hubble is still super important. And even though we have a new super cool James Webb telescope, we still need a Hubble because they look at the stars in different frequencies and stuff like that. Or you could do like an outing. You could go to the zoo or bird watching, or you could bring in a speaker for an in-person event too. If you want, you can partner with another chapter too. You could have like if you have to do something online, like a Zoom type presentation, you could invite another chapter and collaborate with other people too. Okay, and then periodically chapter leaders meet online to discuss ASA happenings and upcoming events, and like if we're having the winter symposium, then what your chapter's role might be, and that sort of thing, and resource sharing. And it's a great idea to learn from other chapters, especially ones that are going really well and established. You can kind of learn, you know, what have you guys been doing and what works for you guys? Or y'all, if you're Southern. Okay, and so first I introduce myself, and then next I explain key steps to starting or rebooting a local chapter. And now I'm going to share some experience with the North Star chapter. So we timed our kickoff event right after the 2021 ASA Winter Symposium with Francis Collins. And so just like the next week, we did an online presentation where Dale Gentry, one of our chapter leaders, presented on Christian faith, science versus faith, and the Christian divorce from creation. And it was very interesting. It was well attended. We had over 40 people who joined online, and that was how we started. And we meet quarterly now. So we have events spread throughout the year, and during the summer we try to do some kind of outside event, bird watching or visiting the zoo. And we've done some online events like Jennifer Weissman, or bringing in a speaker, like an online speaker. We did a panel discussion. And then we just try to find events and things to do that work for the blended type of chapter that we have. And then because we have people in both industry and academia, we have some different resources and interests, and try to find things that work for the larger group. Some of our events, we've even included the family. Like when we did the zoo, we said everybody could bring the family if they're interested. And we did a little picnic at the gazebo afterwards, and had some people bring their grandkids. And that was just nice as a way to kind of even introduce kids to the idea that you can connect with God through science, and just something for them to look forward to maybe when they're older. You can get ideas from Dana or other chapters. You're sure welcome to contact me if you want. And we have a couple upcoming events. In a few weeks, we're meeting for a potluck and the evening of discussion, and we're going to talk about human flourishing. And the thought was that maybe some of the people have watched the online presentations, or they would have the opportunity to watch some of the presentations from this weekend. And then we could just discuss that and even go beyond what we learned or talked about here. And in the fall, we're going to go to Quarry Park and Nature Preserve, and we have a geology presentation lined up. In fact, I heard today from the geologist that I contacted at a local university, and he would be happy to give a presentation. So I'm really excited that he said yes, and that should be nice. It's a beautiful park in our area. So I'm Christine Johnson. I'm the president of the North Star chapter. I explained how to start or reboot a local chapter, and then I shared some experiences from the North Star chapter. So thank you so much for coming today. Does anyone have questions?
What are the two colleges that you, so you mentioned some Christian colleges or universities, which ones are the ones that are?
Sure, so Wade is a professor of chemistry at Bethel University, and Joanna Klein was a professor at the University of Northwestern, but today she now works for St. Thomas University. And Dale Gentry formerly was at the University of Northwestern, and now he's at Audubon. But we do have professors, I mean, there are still professors and provosts even from a couple of other Christian schools too that are involved in our chapter. Like we have some professors from Crown College. Ben?
What city is it that you're
in? The Minneapolis-St. Paul area, greater Twin Cities. And, you know, there's just some cities right on the edge of Wisconsin that are pretty close to. So, and anybody who feels like we're closer to them than, say, the Red River chapter that's up in kind of the Fargo area, or the Prairie chapter, which is in the Door area in Iowa.
So. I'll just mention that I gave a Zoom talk. Actually, I gave a drum band seminar for ASA, and then the Michigan chapter picked that up and asked me to be present to talk, you know, give a little update and answer questions after that. That latest one was in March.
So. All right, I hear Roger volunteering to make a presentation at your chapter. He can tell you all about perseverance and Super Cam and Chem Cam.
Yeah, I'd be happy to talk about our experiences on Mars. So.
Yeah. All right, we'll be booking you sometime in our cold, dark winter.
Oh, I'm just because you guys might be
What kind of turnout do your events get, and where do you advertise primarily?
All right, so we have had up to 40 on some of our online events because those events, professors gave extra credit to their students. And so they just, you know, came. And we've had some students also come to our in-person events. This is probably our smallest event, and about a dozen. So I send an email to Dana, and she forwards it on to anybody on the email distribution list that's associated with the North Star chapter. And I think the professors maybe put flyers in or tell their students.
That was actually my question too, related. Who actually is in your chapter? Do they have to check the checkbox?
I think we just did anybody in Minnesota, Western Wisconsin, and Eastern South Dakota. Mm-hmm. And that we just
set up. Did you set up like by zip code to pick up beyond Minnesota?
Dana, how do you send it?
We actually can filter the membership database in multiple different ways. So people can elect to be in the chapter, but if we want to capture people out there that are not in the chapter officially, we could do it by zip code or by discipline or by region.
So we even have someone who's a missionary whose parents live in Minnesota. And so when we have online events, he'll join if it's not in the middle of his night, even though he's not physically located even in the U.S.
I was going to ask about your virtual events, but I think you've already said the virtual events truly are virtual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
And so
anybody can come.
Right. Participating in the D.C. chapter, naturally before COVID, one of the ideas that was very successful is that we would meet over dinner and have a lecture, which was really a nice thing to do. And I know that Mike Beidler sometimes would have everybody over to his home, which is also a nice thing. But of course, COVID makes it very
right. Exciting. So, and we started during COVID.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We've just had a couple events. We've had three events that were during summer.
Right.
During our very short, beautiful season of summer. And then we've had several online events during our cold, dark winter.
Yeah, I suppose if you had the right facilities, a virtual event where the speaker was virtual, but people were together.
Right, we could do that too.
Yeah.
And we had some people who did kind of like a mini group for the winter symposium, invited a few people over, had some people at their church. But we sort of just left it to each chapter member to figure out what they wanted to do for that.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I think things will change as COVID changes too.
Right.
How often do you do events with your chapter?
Quarterly. So we do one in like February, May, August, October, somewhere in that time frame.
Is that typical for a chapter to do quarterly events, or is there a
I think that's pretty common, but it's not required.
Yeah. I'm not sure there's a typical.
Yeah, it actually runs the gamut. Okay. We have some chapters that are really active. They're rocking out, and they do monthly, quarterly.
My people have asked to tone it down.
Tone it down is too much.
They can't make every month, and then they feel bad.
Yeah.
But they just right. So I'm supposed to tone it down.
I'm actually the president of the Ohio chapter, and we typically get together only twice a year. Okay. So there's no prescribed way of doing it.
Okay.
Any other questions? So I noticed some really fancy looking postcard things that remind me of some of the postcards that you've had for other sort of national events. Does Dana make those? And do you also print them and distribute them? Or how does that work?
Yeah, I make those. Yes. I mean, and I made them to look like the first one I made, I wanted it to look like the Francis Collins Winter Symposium, so I kind of made it look like that.
Okay.
And then that case, we just made it digitally and attached it to the email. And if people had, if the professors had a way to display that, they would. I mean, I don't really have a way to put it.
Yeah.
Especially at that time when we weren't even in the office, there was no.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Okay. So I don't have a whole lot of way to advertise personally. And we have a one company bulletin board where people can put personal things and I can stick stuff on that. But.
Yeah. You put in text, other text with your email, or just send it?
Yeah, and then it's on the ASA website under our local chapter too. Mm-hmm. So there's a link. We have found it's really helpful to have a QR code, so people can use their phone to find out where they're supposed to be, and it can bring them.
That's on your graphic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'll talk a bit about the logistics of that, because as a chapter leader, you would have access to the front end of our platform that we use for membership development and records.
Your webmaster gets special features.
Yes, and you get training on how to use that. But from the front end of the system, you cannot attach an image as a chapter leader. So we actually work as a team. She puts the graphic together, and then when she wants it to go out, I have to do it on the back end of the system as an administrator. Most chapters don't do that, but that is a service that we will provide. For general correspondence, you have the ability to send out an email to your members regularly, without one for me.
So in the state location or something?
If you are an administrator in your chapter and you log in through your member portal,
you
automatically have... he sends those out. I don't send those out. He does that.
He sends them out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He does it from the front end of the line system. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Since you have some new students coming in with some classes getting extra credit, were you able to use that to recruit new members?
Yeah, they're invited to attend, and we always have a little blurb about the ASA, what it is, and, how to sign up. And students get free membership, so I don't know how to see it if they sign up. That's not something.
Yeah, that comes into the office and then Becky makes that part.
Right. Occasionally there are seasons where new members get a book or a discount membership or some kind of benefit. It's always a good idea to check with Dana when it's coming close to your event to see if there's anything like that you should advertise or mention any other upcoming ASA events. And it's nice if you know what your next event is. So we're going to meet August 22nd for this potluck and discussion night, and then we can talk about the October 1st one. And then hopefully by October 1st, we'll have an event date for or at least topic for February figured out so that we can mention it to the people who were there.
Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks.
You came straight away, or are you staying?
Yeah, my flight's at 1:30. I guess I could stay for just a few minutes.
But... Okay.
So, Christine, would you like to talk about your work and your faith?
I mean, you wouldn't know that, would you?
You might get
tapped into.
Looks to me like you got a fascinating career. So
yeah, I do, but I think they're a little bit more disconnected than maybe like the professor at a Christian university. I'm happy to share.
You can do that.
Thank you, Christina.
Do you want me to sign this, Jean?
Yeah. I did.
Christina, as we were talking, I was like writing furiously about things.
What did you just
say? Great ideas and everything. Wonderful.
So we've talked about there's a power plant that we were thinking of touring, but they're not touring because of COVID. And there's a number of things you've tossed around, the ideas about COVID. Things are still not going back. Sometimes zoos have special educational tours that they'll do.
Behind the scenes things.
Right. It's just happening right now.
Lynn, field trips might be a fun idea.
Field trips,
we can talk later. So I am Julie Woodman. I'm an associate professor of biology at Colorado Christian University, representing kind of the student chapter voice. And so I'll kind of share really the story of how the CCU chapter got started. And what you'll find is when I started, I pictured the growth of a chapter to be quite linear. And with students, every year is completely different than the year before, whether it's COVID or not COVID or just the population that you're dealing with. So really it kind of goes like this. And so if it seems disjointed, I'm just gonna blame it on the fact that it's a student chapter and not on my lack of preparation. Just so I know who is at a university associated with. Okay, so a fair number of you. Do you guys have chapters? Okay, so you're kind of thinking, good. If you're not at a university, is your ASA chapter connected with one? Do you do anything with students? You do things with me. Well, if you're not, you don't have to totally tune out because this might give some ideas.
I must have my phone.
Oh, I'm here. Safe
travels.
Thank you. So if you're not with a student chapter, keep it in mind, maybe you can be. Because like Lynn and I have experienced, Lynn is the president of the Rocky Mountain chapter. And so we work really closely together and some wonderful collaborations have come through that. Okay. So when you start a student chapter, really any chapter, one of the items on the application is your purpose statement. Okay, so this is what I, with some students, came up with. The Colorado Christian University Student ASA chapter seeks to thoroughly explore matters of faith and science within the framework of scientific integrity and a Christian worldview. The reason that we put that into our purpose statement is because maybe at many Christian college campuses, you'll get talks of science and faith that lend more to pseudoscience than actual science. And so we wanted to bring integrity to science, but also keep that authentic Christian worldview. We wanted to do this by initiating dialogue. Students don't want to be lectured at. They get enough of that in class. They want to talk. They want to converse. And so it was important to us that we could do this through just open dialogue where they can ask questions and get answers without prejudice, without judgment, as well as to create fellowship. Students want to be around other students. And so those were kind of the goals, to thoroughly explain matters of faith and science through dialogue and create fellowship. And so that's kind of what guided our chapter and what has guided. So we're relatively new. We were founded in late 2018, December or so, or maybe early 2019. The dean of my school, Mark Parker, said, hey, there's no reason we shouldn't have a chapter at a faculty meeting. Who has the bandwidth to take this on? And I raised my hand. And so that's kind of how we got started. I had been to the ASA conference in 2017 that was in Golden. Some of my students presented there. And so it was a good transition. And so we really started in spring of 2019 with really strong, motivated, excited students. And so we had a really strong leadership group that first semester. They had great ideas. They implemented the ideas. They did the planning. I was just kind of an extra along in case they had questions. They really did the heavy lifting. So it was a really easy start for us. And then they graduated. And then COVID hit. So this year, and I can't blame it on COVID because pre-COVID, the leaders were already gone. There were other students that had said, yeah, I'm really interested in leading, but they didn't have the skill set or the time or whatever it may be. It was a very different year. It became more me saying, hey, remember how we talked about doing this? We didn't do that, you know. And so that was already kind of a transition. A lot of the heavy lifting came onto me, which I wasn't prepared for because we started totally different. So it already kind of dipped down. And then COVID happened and everybody went home. And so this year wasn't a wash. I learned a lot of lessons. We still had a couple events, but it felt very different. And it was a lot harder as the faculty advisor. I'll get to the lessons learned at the end. And a lot of them were learning that you don't learn things as well when things are easy, right? So this was a big learning year. And so, still dealing with the pandemic, CCU was back in seat, although students were in and out of quarantines and on Zoom, but largely we were in seat, students were on campus. And so this, in my mind, was kind of our rebuilding year. I knew that I didn't have student leaders that were strongly motivated, or they didn't have the time. They were pulled in too many directions. And so really the goal of that 2020-2021 year became to rebuild, to get students interested, to offer something to students in the science and faith realm, and then see if anything came from that. And so I organized a three-part discussion series with one of my colleagues that I'll talk more about in just a minute. And as I had hoped, three students came up to me, I think after the first one or before the first one, and they were like, this is awesome, we should do more like this. And I was like, well, funny you mentioned that. There's an organization for that. And so they became my leaders then last year. And they were super extroverted, really good organizers, really good friends, and so they did a lot of things together anyway. They brought all their friends with them. And so we're coming off a very strong year. Granted, they just graduated. So last year we had a really strong leadership group. They planned several events, a lot of collaboration with the Rocky Mountain ASA, and they started what I'll talk about in a minute, which is coffee hour, to really kind of dive into that fellowship piece. They were a very outgoing group. They really liked friends. After COVID, seeing faces is just wonderful, and so they really capitalized on that with the coffee hour. So this is kind of where we're at now. Next year, like I said, this strong leadership group has graduated, and so the wheels are turning now what this year will look like. One thing that maybe you're realizing from this brief history is, like I said, it's not at all linear. It's really up and down. And I tend to be a perfectionist. I want things to just work. And so this has also been a humbling experience for me to really kind of let each year be different and give up control from that. So I'm going to talk just a little bit about some of the successful events. We have a lot of successful events here. More recently, this three-part discussion series and then the coffee hour have really been strong as well. So I'm going to give you a couple ideas of what we've done that have been really successful, that have gone really well. And then I'll give you kind of some of my lessons learned through the other things as well. So like I mentioned, that three-part discussion series during the pandemic year or one of the pandemic years was really, really helpful. It had really good student turnout. It was all on Zoom because I didn't know if I would be in quarantine or what students would be in quarantine. And then some of it was pre-vaccine time. And so we had planned it to be all on Zoom. And this is our advertisement from that Science and Faith discussion series. After talking to students, you can see it has a theme. So the first discussion was God's glory through creation. The second discussion was the impact of sin on creation. And then the third was science as a mission field. And this was, like I said, on Zoom, it was a 1-hour conversation between myself and one of my colleagues, Dr. Amanda Furness. She's a chemistry professor at CCU. We kept it informal. It was more like a discussion series. We both had a cup of coffee or tea or something to keep it informal. And it was more of an opportunity for students to watch us dialogue and converse and chime in with questions. We had hoped that they'd dive in a little bit more. They had great questions at the end. But having the two of us to talk, I think the students really liked that because it wasn't a lecture. we had kind of planned where we saw the conversation going. Similar to something that I saw Deb Harsman and Hugh Ross do, we talked about where we're similar and where we're different in views. I think that's important for students to kind of be exposed to that spectrum. And then, like I said, students from that, from this event, new student leaders came out. So if you're thinking about starting a chapter, this is a not too scary, fairly easy way to kind of maybe feel the waters and try and get students involved, see what comes out of it possibly. That worked for me. We also do several of this throughout our time as a chapter, and we do this in collaboration with the Rocky Mountain chapter. Our ASA recorded lectures. The ASA has a wealth to tap into. All of the plenary lectures this week have been recorded, and you can view those. We do a ton of ASA plenary lectures, followed by discussion. A lot of this came, this is not my idea, so I do have to give credit. Lynn, really, you guys have been doing this so well with the Rocky Mountain chapter, and then we just kind of piggybacked very, very successfully. It's really effective. It's also cost effective to watch a lecture and then have a live discussion. These are usually in person. We did this with Francis Collins' talk. Sometimes you'll be able, especially if you're an ASA member, to get the speaker to zoom in for question and answer. So we did this with Catherine Hayhoe a couple years ago. She actually Skyped in because it was pre-Zoom, but we watched her talk from Golden, from the 2017 ASA, and then she Skyped in to answer questions, and the students loved that. So like I said, if you're thinking about starting a chapter, I highly recommend these options. Other events, so our weekly coffee hour was, because I have really social students this past year, and it really did a great job of providing fellowship for students. They don't always want to come for a lecture. And we have, at CCU, we have chapel Tuesday on every Tuesday and Thursday. And there's about a 30-minute gap between when chapel ends and the next class session begins. And that's when we offer coffee. It is a little bit of heavy lifting on me because I have to have the coffee and snacks ready to go. I stole this from grad school. Every Monday afternoon at CU, they had coffee hour from 4 to 5, and it was very low-key. You would drop by, and you would see people. Even someone as introverted as myself went to the coffee hour. And so we'll continue this year. You know, sometimes it's 3 or 4 students, sometimes it's 20. Here is a picture from one of our coffee hours. So there's a box with all of our snacks, there's hot water, there's coffee. We bought a coffee pot so that we could afford it every week instead of going to Starbucks or whatever it would be. And the ASA gave students some masks and some visors. So we were fashioning our wear. Here's my colleague, Dr. Furness, who did the discussion series with me and everything. I would get faculty to come as well. So students come not only to talk to each other, but also to be a little bit more informal with students. Great way to build fellowship. It's a little bit of extra work. There were some weeks where I really wish that we didn't have coffee hour if I had a busy day, but it was really worth it. And you could probably get students to have a heavier hand in getting the coffee ready, getting the snacks out, that kind of a thing. We've also done ASA member talks and invited speakers. Here's some of our advertisements. I'm not good at advertisements, so whatever the student came up with, that is what got posted. And so it changes a little bit year to year. So fellowship coffee hour. Here are some pictures from a Rocky Mountain ASA member, Angela Cantola, who is a fisheries and wildlife biologist. She gave a talk to students about all of her work. Here's a picture after the lecture of some of the professional members, as we call them, conversing with the students. And then she took us on a field trip down the road to see some of the Colorado native fish. Students love that. We'll also invite speakers. We've had Dr. Kevin Wilson, who has been a clinician for several years and done a lot of medical missions. He came during that heavy COVID year. You can see we're fairly social distanced with masks to talk to students about his experience. So it's not one size fits all by any means. I'm going to wrap this up because I've been talking too long. We've also had, just this past year, we've used our ASA budget fund. So every chapter, like you heard, gets a starting sum of money. I believe it's $1,000. And so this past year, we used some of that to sponsor our Rocky Mountain Research Conference. We have an undergraduate research conference. I'll actually be sending it out in the coming months, so keep an eye for it if you want to bring students. But the ASA sponsored prizes for the top presenters, and the Rocky Mountain ASA members judged the presentations. We also bothered Angela Cantola once again to give a keynote talk. So it's all undergraduate presentations, except we have a keynote speaker this year. So there's a lot of opportunity for collaboration if you have a local chapter and they're open to collaborating. It really can strengthen a student chapter, because student chapters do go like this, depending on what students you have any given year and how busy you are as a professor. The local chapters offer a little bit of consistency to join with events, to support events, and it really is enriching for students. Okay, two slides. Now just about my lessons. First of all, communication is key, which I am not always good at. I think last year's success was because I had a social butterfly of a leader who loved McKenna. Yeah, she could speak. She will run her own company someday. I don't even know what it will be for. She just does those things very well. So email list, regular emails reminding students what's going on, a texting list. Hey, don't forget coffee, you know, right as chapel is ending. That is for students maybe better than an email list, because their email just gets bogged down as it does for all of us. Advertisements, so we post around campus. With the student chapter, we really, more than anything, we post our advertisements around campus, and myself and colleagues announce events in class more than anything, much more than email for the student population, because they're all there anyway. And lastly, lessons learned. So because the student involvement will go like this, depending on the strengths of the students that you're working with, you need a consistent faculty advisor and faculty support. You know, I'm not the only one that advertises these events in classes. And that's very helpful. Students need incentive. Food is helpful. Coffee hour, you know, they come for coffee and stay for the fellowship. Extra credit is fantastic if you can do that within reason. I build it into my classes where out of, you know, how 1,000 points, they can get up to 10 points extra credit. Every ASA event is 3 points. And so if you do the math, they're not helping themselves that much, though they are enriched by the experience, which is why I feel okay offering the extra credit in the first place. But incentive does get students to come. Collaborate like with a local chapter. Like I said, they offer the consistency and the support, and that's also enriching for students to be able to converse and talk to professional members. Communication is key depending on what population you're working with. That will vary. A text message is probably better for a student than an email in a lot of cases. And then also when planning, think Goldilocks. So students tend to be overcommitted and underdedicated. They are pulled in so many different directions in today's society. Even if they want to, there can be a lot of barriers to whether or not they'll be involved with something. And that includes the ASA. So I do like the coffee hour because it offers the consistency. It's a very low pressure thing, but it keeps the ASA present. If you have too many events, they'll be overwhelmed and come to nothing. If you have too few, they'll forget you exist. And so that Goldilocks will look different depending on where you're at, depending on what student population you are. But trying to find it is kind of the key. So I went a little long. I will stop talking. Any questions?
Yeah, we're fine on time.
Are we doing okay?
Yeah,
okay.
So yeah, any questions? A little bit different than what Christine presented.
And I had expected more like, this will be great. We'll get off and running, good start, and we'll just keep going. And it's been humbling. And I kind of had to let go of some of that control, because every year will be different and I have to be okay with that. Yeah.
I'm just curious, how big the science faculty is at Colorado Christian, and how big is your student population in this, both in the sciences and at the school?
Yeah, so at the school we have 1,500. The sciences have been growing. We added a nursing program, and that has had a lot of appeal to a lot of students. trying to think, I should have it, I want to say about 60 graduating seniors, so about 60 in every class or so. That number is increasing, maybe we'll say 60 to 100 for really big numbers. The faculty, there are 3 biologists, 2 chemists, a physicist, and we just added 3 engineers more or less recently. Oh, 2 more biologists, 11. We've grown a lot. When I started, there were 4 of us, and I'm in my 8th year now. So this, the School of Science and Engineering, when I started, we were in school, and we've had tremendous growth within our sciences. So,
and at a very small school, our science programs have been around 6 years.
Okay.
And so very small faculty,
yeah.
Very small students.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my husband teaches at another very small school who's had science programs longer.
Mm-hmm.
Our school, our campuses are close, but I think one thing that, you know, do you collaborate with other colleges in the area? I'm kind of thinking, you know, could we do a joint thing?
Yeah.
I get students back and forth.
I think you definitely could. I mean, once again, it's the student, it's, you know, because not only you can plan a great event, but getting students there is the, when you go, when students go, they love it, but it is a matter of getting in there. You know, at CCU, every Wednesday is devotional groups. Every Tuesday is intramurals. Every Thursday is, and so finding like even a time when they can come is challenging. I think you could absolutely do an event if they're close. Transportation could be an issue. You could try Zoom. That can increase attendance, but decrease participation. I mean, it's just that, you know.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I have a suggestion about that. If you get a local speaker who comes, you could do like a pair. Like have them speak at your college and at his college.
Yeah.
That would eliminate the transportation issues. Like you could have like a, whatever works, like a noon at 4 o'clock or something like that. Yeah, it doesn't have to be. Please just repeat the talk.
Yeah.
Or you can find that, you know, ask the person to do something that would stand alone, but maybe so that somebody might want to go to both, for example.
Mm-hmm. Or you could even do like one event a semester together and incentivize it with extra credit, tack on a dinner so that they have time to talk, but then do smaller events just your school so that you're building that fellowship. That might work too.
Yeah, and I'll offer too the logistics of doing that structurally is that you do, as a chapter, have a pot of money that you can use for doing outreach. And it's fairly simple to handle that through a reimbursement. You also have the opportunity that as you bring members in, you can earn dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So just keep that in mind. We'll go over a little bit of that, but I wanted to mention that since we were talking about it logistically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's just to pay. If you have a student who's ready to go, that year is going to be super easy with planning because they do the footwork. They know the people. They'll get the kids there. Just be prepared that when they graduate, you know, ideally I would reload every semester. I'm not there yet.
Yeah.
I hope to be. But it just depends. You know, maybe you start with a, like I did, you and your husband do a discussion series on Zoom. Incentivize it, get students to come and participate, or you keep it in person and then see what students fall out of that, which students are really interested.
I also want to echo the concept of not getting discouraged when you have a year where things dip down.
Yeah.
That is so normal when you're working in volunteers, mm-hmm. and having events and leaders, and so
yeah.
Thank you for that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're not alone with that.
Yeah. Any other questions? Great. Anything that you want to add on as far as the partnership from the perspective of a regional?
We have in the Denver area, not only CCU is the only, no, that's not true. It's the Christian University. We also have Regis, which is Catholic University. I reached out to them once to get involved in ASA stuff, and got absolutely no answer whatsoever. So I haven't even tried it again. But we have very close, 2 excellent universities, very heavy science engineering oriented, and then one that's a little further away. And we've had a table of time trying to get students at these secular universities to be involved. And we've tried working with the campus groups, IVF and so on. And it's so much easier working with Julie, maybe it's because it's a totally focused Christian university.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But we're not giving up on school lines in Boulder. We're continuing to try, but that's been more frustrating. So if we were just sort of blessed having CCU in our neighborhood, so that we can, and Julie's boss, who's the head of the science engineering department, is also very ASA supportive. And so that makes it so much easier.
Yeah, they supplement funds for coffee hour, and just he makes it really easy. And really all of my faculty are very supportive. They pop in, they offer extra credit when it applies to content from their class, that kind of thing.
And it's been very easy just to use the CCU facilities,
yeah,
a conference room, for even meetings that don't involve students. So it's been benefiting in so many ways.
The hardest thing with this generation is that they are overcommitted and underdedicated. You know, I mean, they're so overcommitted that they can't be fully dedicated. You know, they, and at CCU, there's countless wonderful opportunities for them to get involved in. And I think it's very appealing, and then they try and get involved in too many, so then they can't do any of them wholeheartedly. And so, and I think at secular universities, it's different opportunities, but it's not dissimilar. They have jobs, they're athletes, they have relationships. All of it's on Facebook telling them to go here and there, or whatever the new one is. And so, you know, that's what you're up against with students, is getting them to come. And that's where incentive can really be helpful.
Thank you. Well, Arnold brings up in his presentation, I just want to make you mention that those partnering of the individual chapters is really powerful, we're finding. There are many of our chapters regionally that are doing that, and it's in those situations where we see a lot of outreach. So you can look for opportunities to do that.
Okay, so I'm Arnold Sikkema, so a lot of you already know me, and my starting slide here, similar to the starting slide of the talk yesterday. I was worried that it was the same one, and that's why I turned it off and back on again, but it's the same one. So I'm a physics professor at Trinity Western University. I've been there for 17 years. Judy Taranchuk was the local chapter leader before I arrived, and she passed that over to me in the early, around 2008, something like that. So I'm gonna say there are two different kinds of things in my talk here. One is about CSCA overall, what we do in our overall chapters, and then I'll talk about the Vancouver chapter. So in a 3-year period, we had a large grant from the Templeton World Charity Foundation. They were looking to establish science and faith action in other countries besides the UK and the US. And so we got a grant, and we hired Mark McEwen, who many of you know as our project development officer. He worked full-time for us for 3 years. Now he works only 12 hours a month. That funding was really instrumental in getting us to go beyond our existing 3 chapters. So before 2016, we had 3 chapters, Vancouver, where I am, and Hamilton, and where is it? Oh, Edmonton, right, Edmonton, over here. So then during the period of the grant, we grew and added 8 other chapters. So we added Calgary, we added Saskatchewan, which is a province, but we didn't have a designated city, so there's Regina and Saskatoon are the main cities. The Winnipeg chapter, and over here we added Waterloo and Toronto, and we added Ottawa and Montreal, and then we have Nova Scotia chapter, also a province, but there's sort of 2 main centers that the chapter gathers over there. So in the Vancouver chapter, a typical Vancouver event is actually at any one of these places. So we have a 1-hour sort of breadth from Vancouver to Trinity Western University. So University of British Columbia is about 1-hour drive west of us. And so we'll have events at any of these locations. And we have people at each of these locations, and sometimes we have people in churches. So like this is Dennis Venema's church. They're very open to having CSCA events. We work with what's called the Christian Leadership Initiative at Simon Fraser University, where these are all public universities. These 2 are public universities. There's a group of 5 or 6 faculty that have been working together to do Christian student ministry on campus. They're from all various disciplines, but every semester they have 1 talk on science and faith. And so we correspond and collaborate on their talk that they're doing. At the University of British Columbia, there's a faculty and graduate Christian forum run by Gordon Parkner. He's been doing that for over 30 years. But every year there's a science and faith talk that he brings in, and we collaborate on that. Sometimes we get the same speaker to come to UBC, and then Simon Fraser, and then Trinity Western University over the course of a day or two, like a Wednesday chapel at Trinity Western, a Tuesday evening event at Simon Fraser, and then a lunchtime event at Regent College. Regent College is a Christian graduate school. Some of you might have met Seth Hart, who's a graduate of that place, and some of you might have met Zillian Lau, who's a Trinity Western student, just graduated, is going to go into Regent College this fall. And we have at the university we have a group of seminaries as well, so we have collaborations with people at the seminary. In terms of members, we have a few members at UBC, one or two members at Simon Fraser University, a few members at Regent College, like faculty members, and at Trinity Western we have three or four, maybe five or six, I keep forgetting exactly how many members we have. Really, everybody ought to be a member if you're a science professor. And you might have met Myron Panner, who's a philosophy guy. He's a CSCA member, as well as Dennis Venema. So these are what we do is we hold events at any one of these places. And sometimes it's just an isolated event, and sometimes it's an event where somebody does a series. And so we bring in a person to speak, sort of give a series of talks, try to make each talk standalone. But then make it so that there's people want to go to all of them, they benefit from that as well. So here are the kinds of events that we have. So we have mostly public lectures and workshops. We've only done one workshop. We had George Marsden, who was visiting Regent College, giving a course for a week, and they said, well, can you please come to Trinity Western and do a CSCA workshop for an afternoon. So he snuck that into his schedule somehow. So what we do with these other institutions is that if they're bringing somebody in, we try to snag them as well. And sometimes we collaborate even financially, where we'll say, okay, we'll contribute to their travel and lodging, and we'll have to like get a car to drive them between institutions and that sort of thing. And then we also have some local speakers who will go to Regent College and Simon Fraser and so forth, and speak on campus. And sometimes we get invited speakers, sometimes it's by Zoom, and sometimes they're in person. Prior to the pandemic, they were all only in person, but now we're sort of working on hybrid and so forth. So the audiences of our talks are the sort of three categories, the university and seminary faculty and students. Not only science students, but students across the disciplines. The general public, which is probably the same as the church members one here. So we have been developing lists. So one of the things that Mark did at the beginning of his work with us full time is he started collecting lists of all of the different churches in the areas and what are their local bulletin contacts, and then sending out invitations to all of the churches in Edmonton or in Calgary or in Toronto to, please put this notice in your bulletin. Some of them said, don't ever email us again. Some of them said, sounds great, we'll put it in there. And it's hard to tell what the effect of all of that was. So here's how CSCA as an organization shows up at these events. And so you've probably seen our booth, and we've got this banner over here, which is every chapter has one of these banners. So that's a very visible notice that people walk you to an event. So this is actually a Regent College event. So this is behind the glass here is where the Regent Public Lectures are held. And this was, I think, in March. So it was an in-person event, which was also a live stream. And so Mark McEwen went and represented CSEA with some pamphlets that we've seen at our booth here now too, and a sign-up sheet, and a poster about this conference here, telling people to come, and we left a stack of posters behind, and they hung them up on the Regent College campus, and people hopefully saw that, and that's why some people came. And there's Zillian Lau, just spoke to them. Come on in.
Yeah. Which one's this meeting again?
This is about local chapters.
Is there one at Zoom?
There's another one across there on transhumanism, if that's what you're looking for. But you're not a state.
Yeah,
we're kind of almost done with this talk on local chapters. So here we have in the University of at Trinity Western. So here's one of our students speaking about her attendance at COP 26 or whatever it was. And there she met Catherine Mayo and was in Glasgow, and she told us that report about what she did there. That was our collaborative event. So it was like a university put on an event in a sustainability series, and CSEA partnered with that to you know, advertise it, bring in members of the wider community, that we have an email list, and we, of course, have our banner and materials there, and you know, brought along a copy of Catherine's book. This is in another lecture hall at Trinity Western, where Dan Vanima gave a book launch lecture. We did a book recently with Michael Peterson at Cambridge University Press. And so it was a book launch with Zoom and in person. So this was an event that we held, I think in November, the first in-person event since the beginning of the pandemic, where we required masks and vaccinations. Like all public events were allowed, were required to have that in British Columbia at that time. So, but we also brought in people by Zoom and actually allowed them to ask questions. So if you're on Zoom, you could turn the camera on and ask a question. And it was a really, really great event. And the co-author, Genesis co-author Michael Peterson, he sent in a video about a 10-minute video of himself as well in his talk. So that's why when we come to an event, we sort of make it clear this is a CSCA co-sponsored event. Most of them are co-sponsored. Very rarely we have a standalone CSCA event. We're usually partnering with another institution, partly for funds, because we can't afford to fly in people and can't afford necessarily the staff to run a hybrid Zoom meeting, although we do have Mark McEwen, so he's in Vancouver, but he's not going to go to every other local chapter. So before an event, we also have a set of slides that are looping, so that people, as they're settling down, they can, you know, read some things. And this is an important one where they can sign up. So if they haven't already been signed up, they can just go there and sign up to be on whatever mailing list they like, their own local chapter, etc. And they can go and follow us on various things. And we sometimes bring along sample copies of the journal to let people know. And we usually have, if we have an event that's co-sponsored by us, then we expect whoever's introducing the event, whether it's the sponsor at Regent College, then they will say this is co-sponsored, and usually let somebody from CSDA say a few words at the beginning or end of the talk and direct them to that booth that we have in the back of the room. So those are the kinds of events that we have, and of course we've been looking at this slide for a while as well. So CSDA has a slightly different approach to local chapters than ASA. And so we're continuing with that, and we're working on seeing how that might change and so forth. But each chapter doesn't have three people, it has just two people. It has a local contract, one local contract, and it has one of the members of the executive council as a representative who keeps in touch with that local contact and isn't even necessarily there. Now, in my case in Vancouver, I am the local contact and I am the representative. So I talk to myself whenever I need to. But I also, you know, collaborate with people at Regent and UBC and SMU. And we have an informal structure where we'll talk about plan events, and of course I have my local colleague at the university as well. And we also have students, you know, who are sometimes are involved in student clubs, where we'll have the chemistry club maybe co-sponsor a sustainability event along with CSCA. So here's what the local contact has to do. The local contact has to plan the event and or collaborate with other institutions, combine events like lecture tours or series, plan, you know, facilities and refreshments, and work on that co-sponsorship if there's an event held in partnership. The local contact communicates with the CSCA overall, so they'll get advice from me. So like Matthew Morris holding an event in Calgary will contact me, and we'll plan and discuss a bit about that. Although Matthew Morris is, you know, he's a great local chapter contact for Calgary, but he just kind of does whatever he likes, and it's always good. But sometimes a new local chapter contact might need some more tips and advice. We do publicity, so Mark does publicity, and we also cover, you know, we do have some finances that we make available, so a bit more of those two points. I don't have anything to say about advice because I don't have any strategies. I just say whatever comes to mind if somebody asks me questions. And so what Mark does is he produces event pages on both on Facebook and on the website. So a great graphic that is visual for everybody. And the events are listed on our webpage, so csca.ca/events. Like, it takes only like 30 seconds to punch in the name, the speaker, and the time, date, and so forth. And then boom, you have it right away automatically appearing on the website. We just put this into a spreadsheet, a Google Doc spreadsheet, which shows up. And then CSCA, Mark will mail out a chapter notice, a local contact writes the text, and then Mark sends it out. The CSCA, you know, Mark and myself, we maintain the mailing lists, so the local contact does not get the mailing list. And there's sort of legal reasons for that as well, so that if the Calgary chapter wants
the mailing list, we won't get it to them. We'll just say, here's the names of the people. But if you want to email them out, we will send that email out for you for various reasons, partly because of anti-spam legislation, which says you can't just keep on adding people to the mailing list. If someone requests to be removed, you have to remove them. And that the CSA office, you know, Mark and me, volunteer plus Mark working 12 hours a month, we make sure that we don't violate people's requests to get removed. The mailing lists are not just the members, but also anybody else who's interested. So our membership is probably about a quarter to a tenth of the list of people who get notices about events. And we always encourage people to join, and once in a while, somebody who's been attending for 100 years locally says, you know, I think it's time to join. Or, you know, maybe I'll give a donation, you know, this year. So I mentioned the control of the mailing list already. The finances, the CSCA contributes toward expenses, and we also receive designated donations. So the CSA office can get a donation from somebody, and then the donation can be just general, or it can be designated for, say, the Edmonton chapter. So the person donates $1,000, which doesn't happen all the time, then they can designate up to three quarters of that to be put toward the Edmonton chapter sort of coffers. And some chapters have no money sitting in their pot, and some have, you know, $2,000 sitting there that they haven't actually spent for quite a while. So we manage the finances. Nobody has a bank account, and if they have expenses, they contact us for reimbursement. We only reimburse what we tell them ahead of time we will reimburse. So our contributions are actually pretty small. So we just, if there's a speaker on rarium request, $75 is what we would provide. And if it's a big speaker, we might provide more, but then usually it's a big speaker who's going to be a co-sponsored event with Regent College or whatever, and they'll be doing more, the bulk of the financial stuff. The CSCA also gives, I think we say, you can spend, if you don't have any money in your own local chapter fund, then we'll give you up to, I don't know how much it was, it's up to $500 a year if you have it. For your own local expenses. But we really encourage people to make donations and get that, and build up that the coffers that way. So that's a couple differences between how CSCA does things versus ASA, and that versus collaborations. And so we maintain that sort of flavor, and we try to be at the ASA in Canada. So those are my thoughts about our chapters.
Thank you very much. So I'll open it up for questions if we have any.
Go ahead.
Well, do we in the U.S. have any anti-spam legislation I need to worry about?
I don't think it's as stringent as what is in Canada, but we do have to put, no email goes out without putting an opportunity to opt out in the bottom. In fact, the YM system that we use, actually, it won't forward unless you have that URL that you can unsubscribe. So there is legislation in the United States, but I'm not familiar with it as much as.
Yeah, Mark is really, really concerned about this. So,
yes.
So anytime there's money involved in any way at all, then you can't send that email unless they have explicitly signed into it.
Right.
And if someone receives an email that they haven't explicitly signed onto in Canada, they're allowed to take it to court.
Yeah.
So that's why we don't let any local chapter have that person, because they don't have that, the skills and the resources to maintain that list and keep it current and to delete those names. But we actually haven't gotten many deletion requests. Mostly it's like, hey, we remember that there were two CSA members who died in the past year. Their spouses or children that they went through my dad or wife from the list, but that's the only cases we had people were asked to be removed. So we are being, treating those lists well and sending out messages that aren't like spam. We just try to send out, one notice and then maybe a reminder if it's been a couple weeks and the event is still coming up. So we try to be respectful of people's email boxes there.
Great. Thank you for that. So we were very purposeful in putting together this seminar in that we want to give you a breadth of the information with respect to the partnerships that we have. And I think that it was really powerful having you present, because the CSCA is a little bit different than ASA. And there's structurally things that we do to partner well on the outreach that we do.
So thank you for that.